Eric Eldred is the, I guess, what do you call yourself? The publisher of Eldred Press. And so why don't you take a couple minutes while these guys work and tell us a little bit about that space.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Basically, I started in 1995 to try to use the World Wide Web as a way of publishing books electronically, just as a sort of a hobby. I had worked in some computer companies before doing this professionally, and it seemed to me that the World Wide Web had some possibilities for doing it in ways that would not been exploited through electronics books like Project Gutenberg. Does anybody know that? Or MIT's Shakespeare project to begin with is just text files basically without any hyperlinks and so on. So I wanted to try to experiment with it. And it sort of became a full-time hobby and a big project from then, where I actually signed on to take care of a number of authors like Nathaniel Hawthorne and Oliver Wendell Holmes and so on. And not that I'm an expert in them at all. I'm just a sort of computer hacker with some average computer hardware and software at home. I use a Linux machine. I have a cable modem. And, you know, I use the new software to VI and that sort of thing to do my HTML coding. And it's pretty much what anybody could actually do if they had some experience in doing it. What I'm saying is that I didn't wait for Harvard or anyone else to fund me to do it. I just started it. And I found that it was the capital to do it is infinitesimal. It's nothing. The ability to do it, I can scan a book while watching television or reading another book. I mean, there's really hardly anything to it. It's mechanical operation. Even a Supreme Court justice, I said, you know, could learn to do it in 15 minutes. But my part was in presenting it as best I could, not only proofread, but also by being able to put in links, notes, explanatory material, link to other things on the web, and make it into a sort of a living document that other people could interact with. I actually started an essay contest, did some online learning experiments with email, had some discussion groups about literature, and so on. All these things attracted a lot of interest in other people then, you know, also began doing this. I wasn't the only one who was doing it. I found that there was probably 100 or 200 people around the world who were all engaged in scanning books and making basically what's a public library online. And I thought we had good prospects to do that until last October when the Congress suddenly passed the Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act, which basically put off limits most of the stuff that was published after 1922 in this country. So I was upset about it, shut down my site, told people to write the president to veto it. He did that. I don't know exactly how people like Larry heard about my case. Maybe you could comment. I don't know. Did you read in the New York Times or something? Yeah. So it got a little attention. And even though 50 law school professors had written a letter to Congress saying that this was bad policy, that was ignored. So and that's the first of it. But I want to say that it's really, you know, it's not open source or whatever that's important. It's the fact that all the content now that will be available on the internet in the future has a very strong chance of being controlled by just a few people. Instead of the internet's potential for, like me with a cable modem and high bandwidth, having a server at home, there's no legal basis for my doing that. All right, it's only at the pleasure of the powers that be that can interrupt this at any time. It's illegal for me as a criminal act to violate any or infringe anyone else's copyright because of the Net Act, MIT student, you know, who put something online even though I'm not selling it. Also, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act makes it into a criminal offense to remove somebody's copyright notice from something. What we're faced with is a media giants that want to turn the internet into pay TV. And people like me, who represent sort of the older generation of the internet, are trying to resist that by showing people that they can participate in a political democracy and produce works on their own. And other people can then discuss this sort of thing, and we can reach conclusions together instead of being having all our intellectual property locked up in some boardroom in Hollywood or in New York City. There are many other, I mean, the copyright term extension is only the first of these things. There's also, you know, the Section 2B to the Universal Uniform Commercial Code, I think, which puts a shrink wrap license onto things and so on. I found that my effort to keep things open was kind of not exactly the same, not congruent with the open source or open code or open software movement. It seems that the putting things into the public domain is not considered to be advisable by the free software people. They feel that it's better to copyright it and then put a license onto the software so that in the future it will be kept open. Now, I think this is a matter of kind of discussion. It's something that needs to be explored, how it's possible to generalize from the case of open software that we started with to open content in the case of books or media or music or other things. And the whole idea of digital media is beyond that of software now. It's not exactly on the same plane. You know, for instance, it's possible to copyright a piece of software without having to actually deposit the source code of the software in the Library of Congress. Now, this seems to be a shame because it means that when the copyright term expires and the software theoretically returns to the public domain, it's quite likely that there won't be any equipment that would actually be able to run the binary code. It seems to me that there should be a requirement to have the source code available, full amount of source code in deposit. Also, when you take, for instance, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, it's extending copyright to something that is unbelievably complex. When you have a case that might potentially violate the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, it really hinges on the fact of whether or not this is copyrightable or whether it's copyrighted. In order to determine that, you'd actually have to look at the source code in order to determine whether you copied the source code. If without having that on deposit, you can't tell whether you're violating it. So there are many issues, concrete issues, involved in this. Now, in order to determine now whether a work that was first published after 1922 is actually in copyright or was not renewed in time after 28 years, it's necessary to look at some big red books called the Catalog of Copyright Entries that are published twice a year by the Government Printing Office through the Library of Congress Copyright Office. These books are not that easy to find. There were none in New Hampshire where I live, and so I had to go to the Boston Public Library to look at them. Last year, I believe, they had a flood in the basement, which destroyed quite a lot of their government documents, including some of their catalog of copyright entries. So I was kind of sunk. It should be online so that you can determine whether or not these registrations were properly renewed. The government has not seen fit to put online registrations between 1950 and 1977, so that it's very difficult to determine whether or not these are actually under copyright. The second thing is, if you did find that it was under copyright, you might want to write the copyright owner and determine whether or not it would be possible to use it to publish it online. I mean, many people would be happy. You know, the fact is, it turns out that it's extremely difficult to find out who owns these copyrights. People are dead. Their heirs may have inherited. They don't know about it. The book has been long out of print. The publishers are no longer in business, and it's a real nightmare. So what I'm saying is that this whole patent and copyright system is designed very often to thwart the accessibility of people like me who want to make it available to everyone in the world. And I don't think the way things are going that the forces are strong enough to represent the public and make it possible to have something like a global public library. And if we rely on institutions like large libraries like Library of Congress or the government or universities or foundations and so on, it's not going to happen. I could take a case like the Martin Luther King Foundation, for instance. His estate owns, copyright to all his writings. And now there's a case saying that one of the speeches that he gave, before a large crowd was actually copyrighted. Well, all of his papers have actually been contributed, donated to, I believe it's the University of California, Berkeley. First they were at BU, but they disagreed with the impression that some of the curators gave of the quality of his PhD thesis. But anyway, they're really locked up. They're not being available. They could be easily available on the web, but it's not possible to do that. So, what we want to do is try to make these things accessible and to remove the barriers that big publishers and so on are putting in the way.
Thank you.